Good evening, everyone. We have new faces tonight. Welcome. We should do introductions around.
Julian.
Jennifer.
Patrick.
Carolyn.
Dan.
Linda.
Britt.
Wendy.
Russ.
Marlon.
Laurie.
Angie. How did you hear about us?
From Patrick.
Uh-huh. From the website. That's traveling.
Last month we had Patrick email us and another person, I guess it's Lushel too.
And someone wrote to me from the south of France. He listens to the talks. Yeah. It's amazing. A little breathtaking. I try not to think about it. Jane came to grief with her back, and I hear that you led the discussion the night, Tuesday before last. How far did you get and what did you do?
We opted not to cover this.
Uh-huh.
We raised it as a possibility. We felt now better that everybody do it together. It was a smaller group. I'm trying to remember what we were talking about.
The Sashin.
Yeah, thank you. So for those people who were there, they shared with those who weren't. And it was lovely. People had very different, you know, angles on what went on there. It was like one event and, you know, numerous insights and points of view. It's very nice.
That's a real good idea. There are as many sit-chains as there are people participating. So then we can just proceed. This is material that some of us gathered together 25 years ago or so, maybe 30, of words of my teacher, Cobencino, about various aspects of sitting, of meditation itself. And so we've been going through it, just reading it out loud and then discussing it. I think we did breathing, didn't we, before? Are we past the breathing part, or?
Where is sitting, like, sitting in the ocean and not being appropriate or something like that? I think that's
oh, that's the last one. Protecting Zazen is like raising your own child. Yes, that's right. That's right, that's the last one. So it is breathing. Breath in Zazen is probably, there may be one more copy. Oh, I've got two more copies. Who needs a copy? Mm-hmm, thank you. In this chapter, Coben says some contradictory things. he often contradicted himself. There are many, many theories about breathing in Buddhism and even in Zen. It's the most crucial part of us. It's the part when we're sitting that we're most aware of, if we're aware of our body. It's the movement of the breath that can become the focus of our sitting. Keep coming back to the body, coming back to the presence of being present, to being what this is, rather than all the ideas and thoughts about it. We can think until we're blue in the face, but the truth of it is we're just sitting here breathing. in Sanskrit, the word for to be is the word for breath. It's how utterly vital a thing it is. In fact, the definition of sentient beings used to be all breathing things. Now we know that everything is breathing, even the stones, even the stars. Not always taking in oxygen, but taking in and giving out. Taking in and giving out. So it's the most basic practice of us, our breath. And then, of course, because we're human, we begin to play around with it and mess around with it and see what happens when we do one thing and see what happens when we do something else. And you can make amazing things happen by the way that the breath is focused, by how often you breathe. Yogis can stop breathing for 5 minutes or so. Take some practice. And in Zazen, you can notice sometimes when your sitting gets quiet that your breathing gets very, very quiet also, until you're almost not breathing at all. That mind and breath actually move together. And in a very agitated state, of course, you're breathing hard. So the instruction, Buddha's first instruction, was to tend to the breath, pay attention to it. And if it's a long one, let it be a long one, and if it's a short one, let it be a short one. And you will see, as your mind is changing, your breathing is changing. You can get excited about a thought, and your breath will be faster. And then you bring yourself back, oh, but I'm just here. And then the breath slows down again. When Suzuki Roshi first came to San Francisco, his instructions were to count the breath, up to 10. And people who tried that said that often they couldn't get past 5 before their mind was way out there somewhere. So hard to stay focused, even though we think we can. Our thinker takes over. We're just squirting out thoughts all the time. But little by little, we begin to notice that as we sit. We begin to notice how the thinking part of us works. It's just churning away all the time. Telling stories. Making up stories to change the story that already happened. Projecting into the future, regretting and sorrow for the past, etc., etc. And all the while, it's just a living body sitting and breathing in one place. So the thoughts, as the breath becomes more focused and dominant in our attention, our thoughts become less... they harry us less. We begin to see through them and see that it's just, oh, one more thought. This thought is bugging me. It's just a thought. What's happening is this right now. So now Coben said that instead of counting to 10, that we should just count to 1. If we're really agitated, if the mind is really stirred up, the best way is just to count to 1 as many times as you need to until it sort of stops all by itself. It's helpful. If we're really upset, sometimes people say, oh, I can't sit, I'm too upset. Better to sit anyway and just count 1. Just give yourself the relief of being where you are, not in your head where all the projected ideas are going on. So, shall we start?
Yeah.
We'll read, each one will read a paragraph as we go around the room.
Breathing. You cannot really tell what breathing is. We are a very interesting existence. As soon as a mother gives birth to her child, a separate body, the child starts to breathe by himself or herself. Before that, the mother is breathing for the child.
What kind of breathing do you do while you sit is an important issue. How the inside of your mouth, your tongue, your teeth should be. You should keep no air in your mouth. It sounds strange to say this, but you can do. But can you do it? When you tighten the upper and lower rows of your teeth, using your jaw muscles, the teeth firmly touch and press each other. Your alertness gets very strong, but don't force the jaw muscles as some students do. Let your tongue touch the upper dome of your mouth. Let your breath go through your nose and straight to your lungs. This helps especially when you become drowsy. Naturally, saliva comes into your mouth, but you shouldn't swallow it all at once. Little by little, you should let it go down without noticing it. If you notice it, it comes more and more, and you have a problem. Saliva is very important.
If you really sense the texture of your inhalation when the air comes in and how you feel when the air goes out, you will have a different feeling. If you just count the breath, you miss it all. That's too bad. This is a very important moment you are living. There really is no time to count.
Counting is a skill you use to quiet a restless mind, a fast mind, or a scattered mind. It's very helpful to finish up your breath just before you come into the zendo. Finish up means to take your finest breath for sitting instead of crashing into the room and starting to sit and beginning to work on your breath. That's too late.
Kaplo Roshi's book, The Three Pillars of Zen, made counting the breath a popular method of sitting in this country because it was one of the few available texts years ago. And as you sit, you get more familiar with your sitting posture and the dynamics of your body and mind. Counting your breath becomes a very small part of practice. It's like knitting a sweater during sitting. It's better not to do it. I mean, definitely you have to drop it sometime. It can be used as a crutch before you sit. Maybe before you come into the zendo, you can start counting 1 through 10. Straighten your breath, then drop counting right there and sink into sitting. I'm not denying the instructions of that. The means of counting is what I'm talking about.
Depending on each person, there is an inner image of what breathing and sitting is. As you notice, there is also a physical element of sitting and an invisible element of sitting, which is called mind. We do mind sitting, body sitting, and we let the breath sit. Three aspects of sitting exist because we can observe our sitting from three angles. We breathe naturally and appreciate our breath and really understand what the breath does to our body and mind. To really connect the three, body, mind, and breath, is the point, not counting breathing.
As Suzuki Roshi mentioned, you should not go all the way in exhaling. You inhale about 80%. With the sense that you could go a little bit more, and with that strength you come back and exhale 80%, feeling you can go a little bit more. With that strength you come back, so it is like drawing a circle with no gap between exhaling and inhaling. With the contracting of the diaphragm and expanding of the stomach, sometimes the whole body expands and contracts. The important point is to have no gap between the end of exhalation and the beginning of inhalation. It's like a hand pump. Water always goes the same direction, but the pump handle goes almost all the way up like this and almost all the way down.
During sitting, your breath should be very regular, very smooth, with almost no effort, not noticing that the air has gone or has come in. Breath has an incredible range of volume, strength, and speed. There are hundreds of techniques you can use depending on your health and emotional condition. playing an instrument, singing, or drawing as you breathe. There are many ways. The basic point is not to push or pull, but to let it go.
The ancient Sanskrit word for breath was prana. This is translated as ki in Japanese, or ki in Chinese. Ki as in Aikido, ki is vitality. Sometimes it is called psyche, life vitality. And this soft part where our intestines are is called hara in Japanese. Hara is also called ikai, the ocean of kai. Our vitals are here. When you have no strength in the hara, you feel very weak. When you are full of energy, this part is full of energy. When you chant, you let your voice come out from this center of your stomach. Basically, ki comes out and informs the shape of your mind. The contents of your mind are that voice.
The ideal in sitting is to forget the breath. You may breathe as you like. There is an incredible variety in the speed of breathing and the emotion of breathing. So if you want to observe your breathing, you should do it for months and months without trying to control it.
My feeling is that each breath is an independent thing. It arises and goes, and some thoughts go with it. You cannot bring them back. That's it. It's the same as your heartbeat. Your whole body is eating it. So if you can forget the breath, then you're having perfect breath. I suggest that you keep your best posture, straight, upright position that naturally takes care of the breath.
From deep breath, which carries your awareness with it, to very shallow breath, which also carries your awareness, you have to choose the best breath between them. You can be aware of the texture of your breath, from rocky breath to silk-like breath, and finally to transparent breath, like a transparent string of breath. You can feel which is the best breath for your sitting.
Sit and pay attention to how your breath goes. Each time you sit, your body condition is different. So each time you must try to find your best breath and stay with that. I always feel breathing is like drawing a circle. It is best to get really familiar with your breath.
So you can see he's saying several things here. One is to let the breath come and go and forget it, and the other is to pay very close attention to it and notice exactly what it is and try to find the best breath. So starting a sit, each time we start over, and so it's very helpful to have some focus for the beginning. His suggestion of focusing on the breath before we even come into the room is very helpful. It puts us in a state of attention that brings us to the cushion more easily. And then the first moments of being on the cushion is always an adjustment. Any change is an adjustment. We keep adjusting, usually unconsciously. Here we're actually awake to what we're doing. And so to have some kind of practice with the breath in the first 5 minutes or so is very helpful. And then to just let it drop away. It will drop away as a project. And you can just notice as your body moves, actually your whole body breathes. Your toes are breathing. The back of your neck is breathing. All of it is expanding and contracting, taking in and giving out. The Tibetans, as you know, have Tonglen practice, which is using the breath to breathe out loving kindness for all beings, to take in all the suffering in the world, all the darkness and pain, and then give away all the love and compassion in oneself. It sounds like a very strange practice, but only if you think there's a limited amount of love and compassion and you have to hold on to it tightly because you might lose it or it'll all go away. When you do a practice like that, you discover that it's a continually renewable force. It's the force of us that actually becomes stronger and stronger the more we're able to give. And often in times of great suffering, it's one of the best ways of being with suffering. Are there questions about this? Or anything else?
And he describes that circular breathing where you don't pause between exhalation and inhalation. Isn't that kind of hyperventilation?
It can be if you're breathing very fast. If it's a slow breath, then it doesn't give too much oxygen each time. If you're going fast, you could hyperventilate.
Well, I mean, just if you're doing deep breathing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I try to pause between the exhalation and the inhalation.
Mm-hmm. Pause is more natural, but it can be different too. You can kind of tend to pay attention to it and see which way it wants to go. And one practice about breathing that Dogen talks about somewhere is that you notice which nostril it's going in and out of, and put your attention on the very edge of the nostril, because usually the breath is just breathing in one nostril. And there are yogic practices of holding one side and breathing and then holding the other side. Don't do any of this. It's really not it's too complicated. But you're right. It does make it's different from the 80% that Suzuki Roshi was talking about. Dan?
Angie, I often feel philosophically that the breath is like the precipice on the top of a very sharp mountain range peak. You know, it's up, what you call it, like up. The mountain comes up and it reaches a peak for, let's say, a mile. And you're walking along the edge, like the top. Mm-hmm. And your breath is that line, that very fine line. And if you're lucky enough, you walk along the line. One of these days, you're going to fall off the line, you're going to die. And the other side is kind of like living, and you're walking down the center line all the time. And if you notice the fact that you're on that edge, because you're not, you can't will yourself off the edge.
Yes.
You're on the edge.
Yes.
And every time, presumably the inhalation part is another step along that walkway,
along
the top. And when I first thought of that years ago, I said, wow, how pessimistic. And then I realized that it wasn't pessimistic at all. It was just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I guess I really don't have a question. I just relay the fact that our breath is the gateway to our life and our death.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching that is watching what will go either to the right side or the left side of that path.
Yes, with every breath. Yes. And if you've ever been with someone who is dying, it's when that last breath goes out and nothing comes in that you know it's over. It's very simple, really. Just as we took one big breath when we were born, you know, then that breath is what we breathe out when we die, and then it's even. And we don't know on that ridge as we walk along when that last breath will be. No idea.
It's funny, you know, when I tell the story now, you know, that I have this vision of this one particular ridge, and it must have been years ago. I was enamored with the photography of Galen Rowell.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with him. And he's got a picture of some ridge in Tibet or the Himalayas, an outrageously beautiful place. And he's up on top taking the shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how many thousands of feet up he is. But that's all you see, is this light of the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sticks the image. It sticks in the image.
Yes. Yes. That's why the old teacher said, don't waste time. Yes, Jules.
In terms of like the breath, I forgot what teacher I was hearing. Like, he said not to become attached in terms of concentrating on the breath,
mm-hmm.
don't become too attached to it because like when you die, there's, what are you going to focus on, you know?
That's a point too, I guess.
Yes. I guess my question is, this emphasis on the breath, how do you know that you're not becoming too attached to it, or does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, we become attached to every single possible thing. And usually life detaches us in one way or another.
That's true.
So in practice, it sometimes helps to check, you know, check yourself and check with somebody else. And it usually comes up. Because obsessions bother us. They put us off balance and we begin to feel funny and realize there's something amiss. And then begin to question and examine and find out what it is. You know? And we do, we just do get attached. I mean, that was Buddha's whole. And as soon as we do get attached, then we begin to suffer. On top of the ordinary everyday suffering that we have anyway. You know, we add to it by our attachments. Yeah. I mean, they say you can get attached to the Dharma also. And some people do, and hold on to the teachings this way, and can't see anymore where they are.
The danger of it is becoming too ideal.
Yes.
Can't
yes.
In the way of actually.
Yeah. Our minds are so good at that, and we love to do it. So it's hard to get back to the ground over and over again. But I wouldn't worry about it.
No.
Mm.